right. Next storyteller is Paula Davis. She's an educator and writer. She's up here all the way from Denver. She made the hall. And you can hear some of her work on the podcast Out There. Give a big round of applause to Paula.
Thank you. There are fewer surprising celebrity cameos in my story. In 2012, I was on a trip with my middle school students to California. We're driving down the 101 into Santa Monica, and I have a seventh grader sitting in the passenger side next to me, and she's using my phone to navigate. And so I'm driving through tons of California traffic with a bunch of 12-year-olds, and my phone rings, and the seventh grader answers it. And I assume it must be the other teacher with the other car full of 12-year-olds. And so when she hands me the phone, I say hello, and the person on the other end says that she's from the National Marrow Donor Registry. And I cannot believe that I'm being asked for money while I'm driving with a bunch of middle schoolers in California, so I say, I'm sorry, I cannot talk right now, and I hang up. So we get back to Denver, and I find that I also have a letter and an email from the National Marrow Donor Registry. And I learn that they were not calling to ask for money, they were calling to ask for bone marrow. So 6 years earlier, as a college freshman, a friend and I had gone to the activities fair, and we had eagerly visited every single tent that there was. And one of those belonged to the National Marrow Donor Registry. And they had told us, do this cheek swab with a Q-tip, give us your contact information, and you'll be in the registry. And we said, sure, why not? So 6 years later, I find out that my cheek swab indicates that I might be a match for someone who's in need of a bone marrow donation. And so they tell me that they want to do some blood tests to see if I'd be a good match. So I do those blood tests. And they tell me they want to do a full physical with a chest x-ray. So I do that. And then I get a call confirming that I am, in fact, a match. And they ask if I want to go forward with the process. And I kind of think, sure, why not? I figure I'm 24, I'm healthy, I have enough time off. And I think if I ever needed a bone marrow transplant, and I was lucky enough to have a match, I hope that they would say yes also. So I start the process, and I start getting a lot of mail from the registry. They're sending me information about how the process works, how many people are in need of bone marrow transplants. And in all their information, there are these glossy photos of donors and recipients together, with their arms around each other, smiling. And even before the glossy photos, I had started to wonder about who my bone marrow was for. But there's a lot of confidentiality, so the only things I was allowed to know were age, sex, and illness. So I find out that my bone marrow is for a 10-year-old girl with severe aplastic anemia, which basically means her bone marrow has stopped doing its job of making healthy blood cells. So even though we're not allowed to know anything about her, of course, I wonder about her. I wonder how she's doing, I wonder where she is, I wonder what she's like, I wonder if she's a dog person or a cat person, if she likes music or skiing or video games. And it feels like a really long way off, but the registry tells me that if the transplant is a success and both parties give consent, then a year after the surgery, they'll put us in contact, they'll exchange our information. So the week after Thanksgiving of 2012, I do the bone marrow extraction surgery. So under general anesthesia, they use a big hollow needle, put a couple holes in the back of my hip bone, and extract about 5% of my bone marrow. For the few days after the surgery, I stayed at my parents' house, like a kid homesick from school. I laid on the couch and watched TV, and I let my parents make me soup and asked me many times if I needed anything. And after the surgery, I start having periodic check-ins with the registry. They're calling to ask on updates for how my health is and to give me updates on how the recipient is doing. They let me know that she's gotten the donation, they let me know that the transplant has not been rejected, that it still hasn't been rejected. And finally, they tell me that it's been deemed a success. So early on, I had decided that I would give the registry consent to give my information to the other party because I kind of felt like the ball should be in their court as to whether we get in touch or not. So about a year and a half after the surgery, I am in New York where I've moved for grad school, and my mom comes to visit me. And my mom and I are out at dinner with my boyfriend, Matt, and on a trip to the bathroom, I check my phone, and I see that I have a new email with the subject line, bone marrow donor. So I have an email from a guy named Joe who says, thank you so much for your donation. You saved my daughter Ashley's life. And he asks for me to get in touch, and he gives me his phone number. So I go back out to the table and immediately show the email to my mom and my boyfriend. And it feels so incredible that suddenly I have an email on my phone from these people who I've been wondering about for so long. And we're really curious to know anything about them other than their first names. So we Google their area code. And it belongs to a little corner of southeastern Texas, right up against Louisiana. And the only other clue that we have is Joe's email address, which is redneck dog gun hunter. Redneck dog gun hunter at an email service provider that is not gmail.com. And while that doesn't necessarily say a lot about Ashley or her family, a lot of us have regrettable email addresses. I tell my dad later on the phone, and he says, yeah, maybe you should never talk to them about politics. So Joe and I do start up a back and forth. He sends me pictures. He sends me a picture of Ashley's first ponytail after she lost all her hair from the chemotherapy she needed before the transplant. And he sends me a picture of him and his wife at his employee Christmas party. And he sends me a picture of Ashley and her older brother standing in front of the Alamo. He tells me about how Ashley had missed 2 years of school, but that she's getting back on track and working really hard in fifth grade. The other thing that happens is that Joe and his wife friend me on Facebook, which offers another possible way for me to sort of learn about them. There are a lot of photos and posts about football and hunting and fishing. There are memes about motherhood and wine. There are a lot of invitations to play Facebook games. And then there are posts about increasing the amount of prayer in school and decreasing the amount of gun control that exists, and posts about the war on Christmas. And Joe, at one point, changes his banner photo to one that reads, calling Al Sharpton a reverend is like calling Jeffrey Dahmer a chef. And he changes his profile picture to the Blue Lives Matter picture, and then to a screaming skeleton draped in an American flag holding an assault rifle. So I'm wrestling with how to deal with these posts and stuff that I really, really disagree with. And on one hand, I think Facebook is no place for a real dialogue. And on the other hand, I think maybe I'm the one person in the world they can never get mad at. But then I get another email, a new email from Joe. And it says that Ashley has told him that she wants to meet me. And so at first I suggest that they come visit me in New York. They can see the city, go to some museums, eat good bagels, and Joe has no interest in that. So we decide that it would be better for them to come visit me in Colorado. I think that makes sense. I'd love to show them Denver, to show them Colorado, to show them my home. And so in June of 2015, Ashley and her brother and her parents and her grandparents pile into a rental car and drive from Texas to Colorado to come visit us. And the first night, we all go out to dinner at a restaurant that my mom has carefully selected, the way that you carefully select a restaurant for people you don't know at all. Not too fancy, not too casual, lots of options. And dinner is kind of awkward. These two families from really different parts of the world together over an unusual circumstance. But Joe carries the conversation, and later that night, my mom tells me that Ashley kept stealing glances up at me from her burger when I wasn't looking. And a few hours later that night, I get a text from Ashley, and it says, "Hey Paula, it's Ashley. I wanted to thank you for giving your bone marrow to me. I'm glad to have an older sister now. I meant to tell you earlier, but I got too shy." So the next day, we have them over for a barbecue in my parents' backyard. My dad goes out and he buys a whole selection of Colorado craft beer for them. And my boyfriend Matt smokes a brisket all day. And my mom and my grandma are making sides and appetizers and lighting citronella candles in the yard. And Ashley's family arrives, and they've brought some stuff of their own. They've brought a cooler full of Michelob Ultra. And they tell me that they brought a special gift for me from their home. Oh, jeez. Sorry. 10 pounds of Boudin sausage. And I wish that the pamphlets that I'd gotten from the registry had prepared me for this possibility. What to do if your recipient's family brings you 10 pounds of sausage, but you're a vegetarian. So I thank them for the gift, and I tell them that I'm a vegetarian, and I make a joke about how happy my family will be to bear the burden of that gift. And so we're eating dinner on the back patio, and Joe starts telling the story of Ashley's illness. He tells us about how for so long they had no idea what was wrong and no idea how to help their daughter. He tells us about the doctors that stuck with them for so long and were determined to figure out what was wrong. He tells us about the diagnosis and then the search for a bone marrow match. And as he's talking, it's impossible not to empathize with him and with what his family has been through. And I realize that this trip is not about politics or religion. It doesn't mean that there definitely are, or that there aren't things that we definitely disagree about, but empathizing with what they went through, and especially with what Ashley went through, is not an endorsement of everything that Joe or his wife have ever posted on Facebook. It's just not what that weekend was about. And at one point, my dad and Ashley's grandpa and Matt and Joe are standing in a circle talking in the yard, and my mom is talking with Ashley's mom, and the two grandmas are talking to each other, and Ashley's brother is doing what he's been doing all weekend, which is texting his new girlfriend incessantly. And so with everybody else occupied, I ask Ashley, who has already told me that she is a dog person, I ask her if she wants to go inside and meet my parents' dog, Meg. And she says yes. And on the way in, I tell her, Meg is really afraid of everything. That's why she's been hiding since you guys arrived. So I try to temper her expectations, and I tell her not to be offended if Meg just cowers and hides in the corner, which is what she does for most people. But we go inside, and we sit down quietly on the carpet in the living room, and slowly, Meg creeps out. She sniffs Ashley and says hi. And we pet Meg for a little bit. And then Ashley tells me she wants to show me a couple of pictures on her phone. And she shows me a picture of herself at Disney World on her Make-A-Wish trip. And she shows me a picture of their family dogs back in Texas. And then she shows me a picture of herself sitting in a hospital bed with a full IV bag next to her. And she says, "This is the first time we met." And so when I think now about that trip being in Colorado, of course, it was great. I got excited to bring them to my home, to show them the house where I grew up and the mountains that I love. But really, the best part about bringing them to my home was introducing them to the people that mean the most to me. And I think about if they came to visit me in New York, they couldn't have gotten the full sense of me because they'd have to meet my family for that part. And I think about the bone marrow donation, and for so long, I thought that what made it possible was my health, and my time off, my flexible job, but really, I realized that none of it would have been possible without the support that I had at home. Not just the fact that my parents let me come and recuperate on their couch after surgery, but all the stuff that they did 2 years later, picking the right restaurant, hosting a barbecue in their backyard, buying a bunch of particular beer that they didn't drink, Matt smoking a brisket for 10 hours, my grandma gloating about her grandkids and listening to Ashley's grandparents gloat about theirs. With all of that, both of our families had made it possible for Ashley and I to go inside and sit on the floor and pet a dog together.
Keep it going for Paula. That was amazing.